It's your Wednesday daily delivery. I am Michael Rand. Glad to be back for another day. Good show coming up. Kent Youngblood joins me here in just a little bit. Talk women's basketball, NCAA tournament, Gophers stuff, all sorts of stuff in play. Caitlin Clark, if you haven't seen Kent's bracket and you're an Iowa fan, you might not love it. He does not even have Iowa going to the Final Four. Spoiler alert. But Kent and I will talk here in just a little bit, get to the bottom of what he thinks is going to happen in this tournament and where he thinks the Gophers are at, like I said, in their evolution. They will play in the WNIT. They get a first-round bye in that tournament a little bit later on this week. A lot of games. Got to get a lot of games on today's show. The Wolves played, the Wild played, Gopher men's basketball played and won. There's a baseball game happening right as I record right now. The first game of the Major League Baseball season between the Dodgers and the Padres. That's going on right now. First, though, what did I miss? I want to start with the only thing that seems to be occupying a lot of people's minds right now. Maybe outside of the Timberwolves. People are still locked on the Timberwolves, but the thing that's on people's minds right now is the NFL draft. A little more than a month from now, Vikings have two first-round picks, 11 and 23, and because of that, Mel Kiper Jr., his latest mock draft came out yesterday, calls the Vikings, quote, the most interesting team in the draft. I want to spend a little time on his most recent mock draft. Now, he's going to have a conference call later today. Hope to listen in on that, maybe write a little bit about that later today. But, you know, obviously talking about some of the things that we have been talking about on this show already. What will they do now that they have number 11 and number 23 in the draft after that trade with the Texans last week? What will they do with that draft capital? Will they try to move up into, you know, the top three possibly if they can? Would New England be swayed to be, you know, to have a deal up at number three? I don't know. That's an interesting question. What he writes about New England, it makes me think that that's still a possibility that maybe they could get Drake May at number three, because he's got Jaden Daniels going number two to Washington, which I think is right now. And he says, listen, said New England wouldn't pass up a quarterback here, right? He says, I'm not as confident as I was before free agency began, talking about kind of looking where they are in their evolution. He says, what I'm saying is this, if a team that fell in love with the third quarterback in this class offered a bevy of draft capital, wouldn't New England have to consider moving down? That would give the organization multiple first-round picks to improve the entire roster, both this year and in 2025. This is not a team likely to compete this season. Talking about New England, saying Las Vegas, Denver, Minnesota could be options here. So, thinking about that, if you're thinking all along has been, hey, these top three teams in the draft aren't budging. They are taking these top three quarterbacks, Caleb Williams to the Bears at one, Jaden Daniels to Washington at two, and then Drake May to the Patriots at three. Maybe three is where there is some wiggle room. That's what I've been kind of saying all along. Are the Patriots movable? This is more evidence that that is potentially in play. Now, lots to consider there. Other teams might want to move up into that three spot. Do the Vikings really want to give up 11, 23, and probably next year's first round pick to move up eight spots in the draft and take their quarterback? Well, if they love Drake May enough, they could do that. Now, what Kiper has the Vikings doing is also interesting. He has them just flat out taking J.J. McCarthy at number 11. Now, in my world, I'm wondering if McCarthy's going to take a trade up at some point because, you know, he's number 21 on Kiper's board, which says, you know, he shouldn't require a move up. I think a lot of people have him kind of in that middle to the middle, not to the far end, but, you know, middle on in the first round, 15 to 20, 15 to 25 range. But quarterbacks are different. If you fall in love with a quarterback, you're going to reach a little bit. You can't just wait around and hope you can get something comparable. It's not quite plug and play like some of these other positions. So would the Vikings consider having to move up for J.J. McCarthy? That's an interesting question. But he also talks about how, you know, in this scenario where they just stay put, he could fall to them at 11 if nobody else is in love with J.J. McCarthy, if nobody else, jumps them to take McCarthy if he can just kind of naturally fall to them. And he says, you know, either way, this is the way he concludes his part on Minnesota. He says, either way, if Minnesota really wants to move up round one for quarterback, I could see it waiting until draft day to see how the board shakes out. That seems right to me. That seems like this is going to be something where they made their move, right? They got to they got the 23 pick, so they kind of solidified that when they could. They now have those two picks. We're not going to know probably more about it until draft night. We're going to have to wait, you know, more than a month. First round of the draft on a Thursday night, April 25th in Detroit. We're going to have to wait probably more than a month to figure out what they're really up to, because so much of it is contingent on what happens. But you could see this scenario playing out. If the Patriots are movable and if the Vikings do love Drake May, which it seems like maybe they do, you could imagine if it goes Caleb Williams and then Jaden Daniels 1-2, maybe the Vikings are working on a deal contingent on that where they could move up to number 3 and take that from the Patriots and the Patriots move down. If that's not the way it goes, or if the Patriots get cold feet, decide, hey, we want to keep our pick, we're going to draft our quarterback of the future, then they turn their attention to McCarthy and kind of make sure they don't get outbid or lose out in that vein. And maybe he just flat out falls to them, and then they can use 23 for something else, or they can move down from there, recoup some picks, things like that. Maybe that was, you know, you gotta have that to have the opportunity to move up, but maybe then that becomes a trade down. I don't know. It's going to be fascinating. It's going to be a wild next month. It's going to be a crazy draft night. It's exciting. I've talked to a lot of Vikings fans who are as invigorated right now as they've been in years. As much as Kirk Cousins was a good quarterback on the field, you knew what you were getting. This is the element of the unknown that drives so much of sports right now, that drives so much of sports fandom right now, the free agency, the draft. And it's not like the Vikings are bad otherwise. Like, they can be a decent team next year. They keep signing a lot of these defensive free agents, signed another one on Tuesday, Shaquille Griffin, cornerback, helping to solidify that position a little bit more, you know, should help give them another veteran with Byron Murphy, give them some more depth. Mekhi Blackman looked like he could be a player last year. They've still got, you know, see what they have in Andrew Booth Jr., a Caleb Evans. Like, they've got a little bit more corner depth with that addition now. They've bolstered their defensive, you know, their front seven a little bit here with that first flurry of spending. Their defense, especially with Brian Flores back coordinating, could be a real strength next year instead of just a smoke and mirrors kind of strength for much of the year. And if they can get quarterback right, always the big if, it could be interesting. But so long to go until then, it's the intrigue that's driving a lot of this kind of, you know, excitement from Vikings fans. A lot of it is fueled by the draft. And again, it's going to only build in this next month, as we probably have to wait until it goes down to the wire on draft night to find out what they really are going to do. And I want to mention the Wolves, too, before we get to Kent Youngblood. We'll talk about some of the other games after that, but this was a big one. They're all big at this time of year. They lose to Denver. They're shorthanded. They're playing a back-to-back. Good effort. You know, I have a hard time with good effort at this time of year when you are a team of the Wolves' caliber. You know, the moral victories this deep into the season don't do a whole lot for me. I get that they were shorthanded, of course. All three of their top three big men are out. Towns for a few more weeks at least. Gobert still out. Naz Reid with that fresh injury from the other day. You know, they're playing a bunch of people who probably weren't in the rotation early in the season. Like, look at their four bench guys from Tuesday's game. Four guys who were key reserves who played, you know, the only four guys who played off the bench. TJ Warren wasn't even on the team until recently when he signed a couple of contracts, you know, 10-day, and now he's here for the rest of the duration. Luka Garza gets 22 minutes. People have been clamoring for that. Actually did pretty well, 11.6 rebounds. Monty Morris was a, you know, trade deadline acquisition. He wasn't here to start the year. And Jordan McLaughlin wasn't really in the rotation for much of the year. So that's your four bench guys, and you had to bring Nikhil Alexander-Walker into the starting lineup, had to bring Kyle Anderson into the starting lineup. You had to go small for most of the game unless you had Luka out there trying to defend. Nikola Jokic. Now, Jokic had a massive game, 35 points, 16 rebounds. The difference in this one really was the rest of Denver's guys shot the lights out. They shot 51.9% from three. Again, the Wolves played well. Like, this kind of effort, this kind of fight will serve them well in the playoffs, but these are the games you still have to win in the playoffs. I don't care if you're shorthanded. I don't care if you're tired. You have to find a way to win these games. They made a really big rally at the end. They got it close. They actually had a chance to tie. Anthony Edwards had a really good look at three to tie at the buzzer, but just came up short, front rim. Probably some tired legs there. I get it. I get all that. I'm just saying, I don't love moral victories this time of year, even if I like the effort from the Wolves. And at the end of the day, though, I don't really care all that much about where they finish in the seeding. Yeah, they fell below below Denver in the seeding. Now they're below Oklahoma City. They'd be the three right now if the playoffs started right now. I know that's not ideal, but every team is going to be hard. I'm just looking at all these playoff scenarios. Every game is hard. I don't think all of that matters all that much. I know the home games are there, things like that. I just want the Wolves, for their own sake, to get healthy by the playoffs and to put themselves in the best position to actually win some of these playoff games, because these are going to be intense. We have not seen them play a playoff series with this much on the line in 20 years. That's how long it's been. It's been since that 2003-04 season since they had this much on the line. And, you know, moral victories at that point will be even more hollow than they were on Tuesday.
MGM Wine and Spirits is the choice for savings, service, and a great selection of spirits, pre-mixed cocktails, wines, and of course, ice-cold beers and hard seltzers. With over 30 locations throughout the Twin Cities and beyond, there's an MGM near you. Head to mgmwineandspirits.com to find a convenient location in your area. Get social. Follow MGM on Facebook and Instagram for all the latest news and trends. Make great moments with MGM Wine and Spirits, your locally owned and operated choice for over 50 years. Save time, save money. Shop MGM.
We talked men's college basketball yesterday. Let's turn our attention to women's college basketball. Kent Youngblood covers women's basketball for the Star Tribune. He is with me today. Kent, how are you?
Good. Good, sir. Thanks.
Glad to have you on again. Last time we talked, I believe, was right before the Big Ten tournament, which was here. Iowa goes on to win that. Iowa gets a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. Gophers do end up getting a berth, at least in the WNIT. We can talk about that here in a little bit as well. But feels like a very anticipated women's NCAA tournament. I've heard a lot of people saying, hey, I'm more interested in this right now than the men's tournament. And we don't need to compare the two necessarily, but this is a moment for the women's tournament to really shine, it feels like.
Well, I think there's more star cachet maybe with the women this year, both in terms of players and coaches. I mean, Dawn Staley and Juju Watkins, Caitlin Clark, Paige Buchers, I mean, Angel Reese. I mean, there's a lot of really good players and a lot of good freshmen, I might add, too.
Yes.
Juju Watkins is a freshman. Texas has a freshman whose name escapes me, who's going to be great. So, I mean, you know, the women's basketball is still on the rise, both in terms of popularity and kind of level of play, I think, where the men have, you know, it's been enough generations now where young boys are playing at high levels that kind of feed in. I think that's leveled off on the men's side, but I think there's still, you know, steps being taken on the women's side just because of the influx of a generation's worth of girls who play basketball.
And it used to be, you know, we're not too far removed from it being kind of the same teams always that seemed to reach the Final Four. You had Tennessee, UConn, UConn with, you know, dominant during that era. And they're still a very good team. But like now with the stars spread out a little bit more, it doesn't feel so cut and dried. And it certainly doesn't feel like you could go into this tournament saying, I mean, you could go into this tournament saying any number of teams could win this thing, right?
No.
You can't? No? Who can win it in your mind?
I think it'll be an incredibly entertaining and watchable tournament, but I don't see anybody stopping South Carolina this year.
Okay.
In my opinion.
So not even Iowa. We were talking before we started recording. You think Iowa has the hardest path to get to the Final Four of the one seeds?
Well, I mean, they potentially have to beat a Kansas State with Ioka Lee healthy. Minnesotan, by the way.
Yes.
And then they'd have to probably beat defending champion LSU. And then they'd get USC. If that would be a great matchup. I mean, if USC and Iowa were to meet in the Final Four, the greatest player maybe of her generation, followed by the person that I think is going to be the next greatest player, that'd be a fun game to watch. But I don't see anybody stopping South Carolina. I think they're on a mission.
What makes them so unstoppable right now?
Great coaching, great depth, incredible scoring up and down the lineup, and a fairly dominant 6-7 center, and great coaching.
Yeah, Staley is almost in a class of her own. I mean, she's kind of built that next level dynasty in women's basketball. I mean, the championships get spread out a little bit more, but in terms of consistent excellence, it's been more South Carolina than anybody else lately, right?
Yeah, she's kind of that's the team now. I mean, they are now what UConn was back in the Maya Moore days, or maybe even in the Breanna Stewart days.
What do you think Gino thinks about that? How's he handling all this?
Who?
Gino, exactly, right?
Well, I think that he feels pretty good about his chances now. I mean, I don't know. I haven't talked to him, but Paige is healthy. They had some injuries this year, but they're playing very well right now. They haven't lost since they lost to South Carolina a month plus ago. They got a good seed. I think they'll make it to the regional. I think they'll make it to the regional final against USC.
Iowa is, of course, a lot of eyes on Iowa. We just saw them at the Big Ten tournament, a week and a half ago in Minneapolis, the Caitlin Clark show. They filled it up for those games. She didn't have her greatest shooting nights all the time. The game I went to, the Friday quarterfinal game, she couldn't, it was funny, she couldn't make a three in that game until she did. And then she broke a record in that game, right? For three pointers in a season. But she was almost exasperated. She was like, finally, I made a three almost. It was almost comical.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, her second half in overtime in the final was ridiculous. 10 for 16, I think, after halftime. But the Big Ten tournament was interesting is that I don't think you saw Clark, at least scoring-wise, shooting-wise, play a complete game throughout the tournament. So it'd be interesting to see, they've had a few days off now. Now they're going to hit the tournament to see kind of where she's at as far as her shot, because frankly, she wasn't percentage-wise, had some problems down the stretch and into the Big Ten tournament.
Does she have enough? I mean, her supporting cast played well in the Big Ten tournament in particular. Does Iowa have enough aside from Caitlin Clark to win it all this year? I mean, obviously they're a one seed, they could win it all, but it just feels to me like looking at them is like they're a good team, but they're a lot about Caitlin Clark right now, as they should be.
They play pretty good defense, but they struggle, I think, against teams with really good centers. Markowski had a pretty good game against them in the final. I think that the biggest difference between last year's team and this year's team is Cezanne not being there.
Yeah.
I think Kate Martin is a great defender at the three and sometimes the four position, but I think that they have their little guard, Gabby Marshall, I think her name
is.
She needs to be hitting threes for them to go a long way.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. But in general, like, this is a very anticipated tournament, not just because of Caitlin Clark, but the possibility of an Iowa LSU rematch in the region final would be pretty enticing. There was certainly some drama in their meeting last year, both in the game and the whole stuff with Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. But it does feel like we're setting up these kind of moments of drama in women's basketball that have, that have fueled the men's game in the past, and maybe that, the personalities, the drama is driving a lot of this. And I think people are looking forward to this in a way that, you're right, like, men's hoops kind of, it's been around for so long. A lot of these players are one and done these days. It's kind of, there's the portal is affecting both men's and women's basketball. But at this point, it does feel like there is this kind of leveling off of, okay, it's, I don't even know. I don't know if it's entirely equal yet, but it feels like there's a lot of interest in the women's tournament, especially relative to the men at this point.
Well, I think being in sports is being discovered kind of nationwide in general. I think we're at a kind of a inflection point just in terms of interest in general. I think we saw that at the end of the WNBA season last year. We've seen that all year with Clark. I don't think it's necessarily going to go away when Clark leaves. We might not see the incredible numbers for particular games, but part of what makes for drama in a tournament is history. And when all the best players are leaving after 1 year, it's kind of hard to build up that history. I mean, in the men's game, if Iowa and LSU were to meet in a regional final, both Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark would be in the NBA.
You're right.
You know, and there'd be institutional rivalry, but there wouldn't be individual rivalry. I mean, that's one of the things that made men's games so great, in my opinion, when I was young, is you have these great Illinois teams that have been together for 3 years playing these, these great Indiana teams. I mean, when you're there for 4 years, that makes a big difference.
Yeah, it does. And next year there'll be intrigue of how Clark does in the WNBA. That'll feel a little bit different, but legacy wise, I don't feel like she doesn't need a championship to validate anything she's done. She's already, one of the all-time greats, one of probably the greatest of her generation. But that said, I'm sure she would love to leave college basketball, having checked this off her list as well.
I would think so, but I don't think it'll happen. That's just
No.
my opinion. I don't think I don't in my bracket, I don't have them making the final four.
You have them losing to LSU in the region final?
I do.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, you saw her a lot more than the rest of us did. I don't think that's necessarily wrong. I'm not sold on the rest of Iowa's team. And if she has a poor shooting night against a team that can defend her well, that could be trouble for them.
Well, yeah, the question is secondary scoring in big games. I think you can always kind of rely on 12 to 15 points from Martin, but Marshall has to hit her shots, and that center whose name escapes me at the moment, a sophomore center, has to be efficient. But LSU is, they've had drama all year. They had, most recently the shoving match in the SEC title game, which in my opinion, I thought Dawn Staley was the epitome of class, and that wasn't necessarily the case with the LSU coach. So I would like to, I wouldn't mind seeing that in a championship game.
That would be fun. That's drama again. These are the things, these are the storylines that even the casual people can latch onto. Let's talk Gophers for a little bit. Obviously, they're not in the NCAA tournament, but they did get a bid in the WNIT. They get to extend their season. Now, the WNIT used to be, like the men's NIT, used to be kind of the second tier that you got to go to if you missed out on the NCAA. Now it's the third tier. So they're kind of in this third tier tournament this year.
I'm kind of surprised they didn't get a bid to the WBIT. I mean, their net ranking was in the 60s, NCAA, and so I don't really necessarily understand that. But normally this would be, oh, it's nice they get to play a few more games. They get to practice. It would be nice. But I think it's at least intriguing because it'll be a chance to see the Gophers, I think, healthy for the first time in weeks. I believe both Bron and Sophie Hart will be back. And so it'll be interesting to see a team that I think was a tournament team at the time that Mara Bron was hurt, what they can do in this tournament. So, I mean, there's some interest. There's maybe more interest than there would normally be in this sort of a tournament situation.
Now they got a bye, so they get straight into the second round. We won't know time opponent for a little while here, but how do we, think about, did they get, what was gained, if anything, without those two players? Did they learn, whether it was good or bad, what do you think they learned from having to play without, especially Braun, for so long?
Well, I think that freshman center Johnson got a lot of minutes, which will serve her going forward, but she's still pretty raw. But I think the person who benefited the most ultimately was Amaya Battle. Once Braun left, Battle suddenly was getting the other team's best perimeter defender, and it was tough for a while. But I thought she had a very good Big Ten tournament. I thought she kind of turned a corner. I think she had 32 points and no turnovers in the victory over Rutgers.
Yes, that's right.
And you know, she scored 50-ish points in the tournament. And so I thought that coming out of the tournament, the biggest news was that Amaya Battle might have taken a step. And so it'll be interesting to see her now with Bron in the backcourt with her.
What needs to happen then for us to be talking this time next year about the Gophers getting ready to play in the NCAA tournament, not the WNIT?
Health.
Yeah, of course.
Not losing anybody to the portal, which hasn't, to my knowledge, happened yet. And then they need to hit the portal, and they need depth. This team needs a bench. There's just no scoring off the bench right now. No significant scoring. And that could mean a veteran guard who you could trust in situations, or maybe a wing who can hit a shot, but they need depth, in my opinion.
They have some heralded recruits coming in, but again, that's, you know, it's hard. It's not impossible, but it's hard to go straight into the Big Ten and be a really good player. It's taken, you know, even some of their really heralded players from the class a couple years ago, it took them a little while. It's taken them a little while to get, you know, fully up to speed in the Big Ten. How much do you think young players could contribute next year?
Well, I think Rucholski, the freshman this year who was on the all-freshman team, has proven that she can score. But even the players they got coming in, there's a lot of really good, from what I can gather, there's a lot of players in that kind of mold who can hit a shot if it's there. But I don't think they have a lot of people who can create a shot. And I don't know that they have anybody coming in who is necessarily a shot creator. I think they'll get better defensively with Kennedy Click being healthy next year.
Yep.
But I think they need to, I think that they need to defend better. I mean, people forget that they won three or four games at one point and were 4-3 in the Big Ten, and everybody was like, ooh, they're getting there. And then they went to Wisconsin and just lost. And I mean, to me, an unbelievable loss to me, given what they had going. Yeah. And what was it?
And that was the game before Bron got hurt, right? She was still healthy.
Bron got hurt. And then they went to Illinois, and when Bron got hurt, it was right after she hit a fourth quarter three to put them up 7, and they were outscored by 12, 13 the rest of the way. So it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like Bron got hurt and it was over. They had a stinker before she got hurt, and then
right.
Swolfe was there for a few games after that. But I think they need scorers, and they need defense, and they need depth. I think that with what they have, if they stay healthy, they can be a tournament team next year.
Yeah.
But if you want to be a tournament team that has expectations, they need to get deeper. They need to get deeper and play better and have more defenders.
Yeah, I think that's definitely what they learned from Bron certainly being out. You can't have one player go out and then not be able to function and win games without that player. It's just,
yeah, how many teams can lose their best player and best scorer and not be affected?
Being affected is one thing. Being affected is one thing.
Affected and only losing two games, winning two games the rest of the way.
Right. Like they need, you know, more depth means, you know, just look at the Timberwolves this year, not to make a complete parallel, but like years past, like you lose one good player and your season is sunk. Now, you know, they've had different injuries. Towns is out. They've had Gobert out for some games. They've had, you know, other injuries, and they still find ways to win games because they've got a lot of, you know, they've got a star in Anthony Edwards, but they've also got a lot of quality players who can fill those other roles around them.
Agreed. But it'll be interesting to watch them in this tournament, just to see that starting five play together again for the first time in a long time.
Yep, I agree. Well, we'll see if they get a home game out of this, and we'll see what happens in the big tournament as well. Should be fun to watch. Go check out Kent's bracket online, startribune.com, in the print product, I believe, as well. Kent, Youngblood, appreciate it as always. We'll talk again soon.
All right, thanks, Mike.
Good stuff from Kent Youngblood, as always. Go check out his bracket. Maybe go fill one out. I filled one out just for fun the other day. Filled out a women's bracket, filled out a men's bracket, and thought that was, you know, it's a fun exercise, of course, every year. And I feel like the women's tournament is just as exciting this year, if not more so, than the men's tournament. I know a lot of people have been saying that, but I agree with it. I think it is. You got the star power, like Kent and I talked about. You've got this growth in the game. I'm looking forward to watching both of these tournaments as they get underway here in earnest later this week. Now, while we're talking about college basketball, I should mention the Gophers men's team advances in the NIT. They win in the last minute against Butler, a rally at Butler. Elijah Hawkins makes the winning free throws with like 5 seconds left. Final score 73-72. More games, at least one more game for the Gophers this season. That's only good, right? That's only good for them to be playing in games like this, to be playing meaningful games after the way last year finished up. You know, maybe they benefited from some teams opting out of the NIT. Doesn't matter at this point. You play the games that are on your schedule. You play to win, and a win at Butler, a good team, you know, a middle of the pack team in a good conference. That's a good win still, a good road win. Nobody, especially, you know, sets out to be in the NIT, but once you get there, you have an obligation to give your best effort. Now, I like the effort they gave. I like the result, of course, and you know, I feel like nothing but good things come from performing well in the NIT.
Royal Credit Union Smart Checking accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union Smart Checking account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
The Wild got a big win at Anaheim, 4-0. Philip Gustafson with the shutout. Things are getting a little interesting. They're only 3 points behind Vegas now, and I was just kind of looking at Vegas. That's the last wild card spot. The Wild jumped over St. Louis, which lost last night. Got closer to Vegas, which lost last night. Vegas got a bunch of road games coming up here in not too long, and the Wild and Vegas play twice in the last 9 games of the season. There's not that many games left. There's like 16, 17 games left in the season for both of these teams. The Wild gets to play Vegas twice. You know, their playoff odds are still pretty low, but they're in like the low 20s, low to mid 20s now. I've seen them as low as, you know, 8, 10% when they were slumping. They're on like an 8-game points streak right now. They're playing some of their best hockey right now. Now, tonight's back-to-back at the Kings is massive. If they come out of this with 2 points, 2 regulation points against the Kings, who are, you know, a team they're still kind of chasing. You know, it's the Kings and the Golden Knights for kind of that third spot out in the Pacific, out in that division out there. So it could be them battling for that wild card eventually, but you got to have all the points right now. But if you can get a clean win tonight, then you start to look at it even more aggressively. But this time of year, it's so hard. You can't afford any slip-ups. They really haven't had many lately. They're playing some of their best hockey, like I said. And the unfortunate thing is Jordan Brodin went down with an injury towards the end of Tuesday's game. That will hurt. We'll have to see how severe that is. But just in general, I'm a little bit more intrigued. You look at, you know, Vegas is maybe a team they could put a scare into at the very least. When you look at Vegas's schedule, when you look at the Wild gets to play Vegas a little bit more. So kind of keeping more eyes on that than maybe I was a week ago. The Wild's played their way back a little bit closer to the fringe of things right now. But tonight, like I said, a huge opportunity and, you know, a huge one. If they can win this one in regulation, that makes me feel even better about it. Let's finish with the Cooler Twins going officially with Louis Varland now as their number 5 starter. They talked about that on Tuesday in the wake of the Anthony DeSclafani injury. Did some battle with Twins fans on Tuesday after I wrote that, hey, maybe the Twins should stop trading for guys who immediately get injured and had injury histories at the time of being traded for. You know, some of it was good, reasonable banter. You know, people saying, hey, they should have done more this offseason. The real problem with this was that they limited their payroll so much that this was the only kind of move that they could make with the Polanco trade. And yeah, I'm listening to that a little bit. I get that you don't have to take on some kind of injury risk if you have more money to spend or if you have more resources to devote to replacing the starting pitching you lost, replacing Sonny Gray, replacing Kenta Maeda. I get that. And some of the people saying, hey, you know, arm injuries happen all the time in baseball. You can't really know. Every pitcher has an injury history. Okay, I'm listening to that. What I'm saying is this. This is another example of a pitcher that they acquired with current arm issues, not just like, hey, he had Tommy John surgery 2 years ago, or yeah, he's had a history of shoulder inflammation 18 months ago. He had to be shut down, things like that. Like, yeah, the way these guys throw, the crazy breaking pitches, the crazy velocity. Yeah, every pitcher these days seems to have some sort of arm issue at some point or some other sort of injury concern. I get that. Their troubling history is that they've acquired multiple guys now who are very recently are basically rehabbing existing injuries. And DeSclafani was a good example of that. He was shut down for the last 2 months of last season with elbow issues. You knew that something like this was probably imminent, that he was likely going to have to be shut down. Now he's probably going to be shut down for the whole year. You knew that was coming. This was this was the same thing with Tyler Mahle when they got him a couple of years ago, when he was on the verge of, needing surgery. He had been shut down like 9 days before they got him. So I don't know. The problem to me is getting guys like that, getting guys like Chris Paddock, you know, maybe getting a little bit unlucky with the Dyson trade 5 years ago, maybe not knowing what you were getting there. But this history of acquiring guys like that, that bothers me. And if they knew, you know, even if they went into this with eyes wide open with DeSclafani this year, hoping to get whatever they could out of him, hoping he could stay healthy, that's not enough of an upgrade. That's not, you know, you could have done more. I think with the Jorge Polanco trade, you could have made a different decision to get a more viable, sustainable rotation upgrade than what you got in that. You got other stuff in that deal. You got a relief pitcher. You got a prospect. You had to take on salary. I get that with DeSclafani. You could have gotten a different deal, I would imagine. Jorge Polanco is a good player. You could have found a different deal if indeed you were worried so much about this, because rotation depth to me was and is the biggest concern for the Twins going into the season. Their first five are going to be fine. You love Pablo Lopez at the top of the rotation. You got Ober, Joe Ryan, Chris Paddock, and now Louis Varland. Those are five good right-handed arms. After that, it gets pretty thin. It gets pretty thin quick. You're not going to have five guys make 32 starts each. That's just not how things go these days. You're going to need 8, 9, 10 starters. They don't have 8, 9, 10 starters right now. They had one more before DeSclafani got hurt. They could have had a few more if they had played their offseason differently, but they didn't. That was my point. So it was a good give and take in a lot of cases. I had to shut down social media at some point and just say, you know what? I'm not going to win all the hearts and minds. They're not going to win my hearts and minds. We're going to have to agree to disagree on some of it. But overall, it was a good back and forth. So thank you for that. That will do it for me today. Good show coming up tomorrow. Susan Sheridan Tucker, the executive director of Minnesota's Alliance on Problem Gambling, will join me. This is March is Problem Gambling Awareness Month. All sorts of stuff happening with the bill in the Minnesota legislature. All sorts of interesting stuff I want to catch up with her about, and a subject near and dear to me, as I will get into on Thursday's show as well. So expect to be joined by Susan Sheridan Tucker on Thursday's show. Until then, I am Michael Rand, back at it again tomorrow.